Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You might not have heard of the comic Andy Kindler, but America's biggest comedians definitely have. Some might wish they hadn't. For the last 10 years, Andy Kindler has delivered on a ruthless campaign against what he calls hack comedy, comedy that isn't funny. And once each year, after poring over the year's sitcoms, movie comedies, and stand-up shows, Kindler delivers his State of the Industry speech. It happens at the Montreal Just for Laughs Comedy Festival, and the audience is Comedy World pros only. Jeff Foxworthy, Jimmy Fallon, and Rosie O'Donnell have all been pummeled in Andy Kindler's comedy slugfest. And this year, as every year, his premier whipping boy was The Tonight Show's Jay Leno.
For those people who are allergic to Celebrex and all those other pain relievers that cause problems, Jay Leno's monologue is now available as an anti-inflammatory. For those of you who... You know, Jay Leno testified at the Michael Jackson trial. A judge placed a gag order on Leno. Hey, if I had known that was possible, I would have been at the courthouse 10 years ago. Filing papers. I would have been doing nothing but filing papers.
It sounds like bootleg tape from the comedian's comedian at his big State of the Industry speech. This hour on Point, we're talking with Andy Kindler, the comic who takes his fellow comics to the woodshed about the state of American comedy. You can join the conversation. Are you laughing these days, despite everything? Who breaks you up? Who bores you silly? And what's your take on the state of American comedy? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from London, where his live show Misery Loves Comedy is running for 2 weeks, is Andy Kindler. He's been a recurring character on the CBS sitcom Everybody Loves Raymond and the Comedy Central shows Dr. Katz, Professional Therapist, and The Daily Show. He was also the host of the Animal Planet talk show The Pet Shop with Andy Kindler. He's appeared on The Late Show with David Letterman, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, and The Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn, but not on Jay Leno's show. Andy Kindler, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I got excited with my credits there for a second.
Yeah, sounds big, very big.
Little, seemed like a little... I actually used to have a PR company, and their whole job was to try and get me excited about my career. You know, they would just call me up, and they say, there's a lot of buzz, mostly coming from us.
Huge buzz. Buzz all over the place.
I love the, and also my other hook, I have a career hook, and that is everything that I put out is poorly recorded, as you can tell from that.
Sounded like absolute third grade bootleg there.
Yeah, it was like a shoe microphone of some kind.
All right. So you haven't been on Jay Leno.
No.
Chicken and egg, what came first? Were you bashing him or he never wanted you? Is this spurned love?
I'm sure he never wanted me. I'm sure he doesn't have a poster of me at home. You know, the thing it's so funny in a way because, well, not, hopefully it will be funny, but the whole issue becomes kind of weird because, you know, everyone used to love Jay Leno. He was hilarious as a stand-up, and he was particularly hilarious when he came on Letterman's show. But then when he took over The Tonight Show, something happened to him, and he just became this middle-of-the-road guy. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I don't want to make it – it's not the most horrible thing in the world. To me, George Bush is destroying the planet, and Jay Leno is just ruining The Tonight Show. So it's not a red alert. Exactly.
We're going to hear a lot of tape of comedians in this hour. We want to get your take on them. We feel like we've got access to the kind of inside critic of the comedy industry this hour with you, Andy. And let's just jump straight into it with Jay. Let's hear a little bit of Jay. This is from his opening monologue one night earlier this week, and we'll get the Kindler critique. Here's Jay Leno.
Want to send our best wishes to Madonna. You hear about this? Madonna, she's going to be okay, but she suffered 3 broken ribs and a broken hand when she got thrown from a horse in England yesterday. Got thrown from a horse. I guess she was riding a horse and just went flying. Same thing happened a couple of years ago. Remember she got thrown from Dennis Rodman? Remember that? She got pitched off and, you know, that's the same thing. Actually, this is the first celebrity horse riding accident in England. Well, second if you count Prince Charles's honeymoon. But no, this is...
Okay, we got the bada boom. The audience is laughing. The national audience figures are there for Jay Leno. Why are you so unhappy with him, Andy?
Well, first of all, the whole way that he does the monologue, I mean, he's Kevin. There's actual footage of Kevin Eubanks laughing at old Mussolini speeches. I mean, this Kevin Eubanks is the band leader and just laughs and just continuously laughs
big
at everything.
Big smile, whatever.
Big smile, no matter what Jay says. And then it's the thing that gets me is, I mean, the thing I love about, of course, everyone knows I'm a huge Letterman fan, but the thing I love about Letterman is he does a few jokes and then he, you know, moves on to the show. Leno's got to try and prove every night that he's the that he's got more jokes than anybody else. And I don't care. You can have 100 writers writing for you. There's just not that many good jokes per night. And also, it's always the same topic. It's always Madonna or it's Janet Jackson and it's Michael Jackson. I just kind of get tired of the same material. And also, recently he's been outsourcing his jokes to India. So a lot of times you go, yeah, how come this Janet Jackson joke talks about the Pakistani nuclear reactor?
It's the Bangalore effect. But here's a question for you.
Yeah.
If you're so right, if you're so smart, why is his show number one? I mean, Americans tune in by the millions every night.
Well, I think it's clear that people like crap. And I think that I have come to the conclusion that mediocrity reigns in this world. I mean, 500 million people voted for American Idol, and you know, how many people voted in the election? And to me, if does it make George W. Bush a great president because he won the election? I mean, I almost wish the election was rigged just so he wouldn't have won. So I'm always kind of amazed when people say, well, something's popular. You know, it's like, well, it's popular. I mean, unless Jay Leno was sending you a check, what does it matter that it's popular? How do we benefit from the fact that it's popular? And I just think that at some point there's like no explaining taste and I don't know. It's kind of depressing, except I think the bottom line is that 50 years from now or 100 years from now, no one's going to look back and look at the Nielsen ratings. They're just going to they're going to remember Letterman. They're going to remember Larry Sanders. They're going to remember things that were great, and they're not going to remember, you know, where they stood on the charts.
And when you stand up before this big group of comedians every year in Montreal at the Just for Laughs Festival, and you deliver this, and it's called year after year, your speech is described as brutal, savage, wicked, vicious. How do they take it? Do they like it? Do they go away crying?
Well, obviously, Jay Leno's not in the room, or if he is, he's in disguise. So, I mean, I don't think I'm not a person who really kind of likes confrontation. So it's not like I want to, you know, it's not like I want to do this to people's face. I'd rather do it behind their back in a way. But it's also, I mean, I'm hoping there's kind of a roast kind of feeling to this, because some of the stuff I do is not to be taken that seriously. Like, for example, I did a joke about Larry David this year, and I think Larry David's hilarious. But my joke was that Larry David and I, you know, we're kind of, you know, we have similar personalities, but a little bit different. Like, he gets upset when the you know, gives his keys to a valet parker and the guy shoots him a funny look that gets him upset.
Yeah.
I get upset at the end of the month when I can't pay my rent. See, it's just a slightly different worldview. You know, he gets upset when someone gives him the keys to a new mansion and they're on a funny keychain.
Yeah,
I get upset when I have to drive out to Pasadena to get a parking ticket contested. So, see, in that case, I'm kind of making fun of Larry David, but it's not that serious. But then there are, of course, when I'm offering $1 million for footage of Whoopi Goldberg being funny, then I think I don't expect her to take that well.
But you are joking about you having to drive out to contest a parking ticket. Are you still looking for that big score because you've burned bridges all over Hollywood, all over Burbank, all over the comedy circuit?
Well, there's no, you know, there gets to a point where there's no turning back in a way. I mean, for a long time. Well, first of all, I try to keep my targets high, so I'm not going to talk about. I try not to talk about people no one's heard of, or I try not to pile on. Like, it's easy to do Carrot Top jokes, but, you know, at this point, it's kind of piling on. But yeah, I think I definitely have burned bridges, but I'm just compelled to do it. It's just I've always wanted to joke, and it's kind of part of what my family's always been this way. We're kind of a very judgmental family, so I need to joke about what bothers me. And so, but I'm not. And then I think I'm not hoping that you know, I'm not trying to be controversial. It's just really what interests me, and I guess I hope that some of the people will take it in good. Like, if they're heads of networks, they'll go, ah, I love to be joked about.
Somebody pull him out of here. Hates Leno. Andy Kindler loves Letterman. Let's hear Letterman from his opening monologue earlier this week and hear what you love about it so much, Andy.
Boy, it's how do
hot again here in New York City. It was just lousy, god-awful hot today. Here's how hot it was today in New York City. The crack dealers, they were selling talcum powder. It was so hot, for an extra $50, the hookers in Times Square will blow on you.
David Letterman with his opening monologue. Oh, we get racy in America these days. He's your hero. He's your genius. What is it about Letterman that you don't find with Leno? What's so great about Dave?
Okay, this is a perfect example. First of all, Paul Schaefer is the greatest. He's not sycophantic. Paul Schaefer has a great sense of humor himself, and I think he's hilarious. So he plays off of Dave in a very organic way. And then also Letterman is really continuing in the tradition of Carson. You know, the joke is in a certain way that he's doing a joke about how hot it is. Of course, the joke is funny too, but he doesn't take himself so seriously. So there's almost, I don't know what you want to call it, a deconstructing element to it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think he inherited from Carson. And that's always been my favorite kind of comedy, is self-deprecating, don't take yourself seriously, and also kind of like sticking it to the structure of how TV is put together. And Leno's doing exactly the opposite. He's like, I'll get Dennis Rodman in there, I'll get the Prince Charles. All he's doing is hitting on all of the popular culture icons that are drummed in our head 24 hours a day, and just making the kind of the hackiest joke and the most obvious joke about it. So it's a world of difference to me.
Well, we're going to look at a lot more American comedians in this hour and get the Andy Kindler take on them. We're talking with Andy Kindler, the comedian's comedian, about the state of American comedy. Andy, stand by in London. There's a lot more we want to hear. We're going to hear later in the hour from clips from Margaret Cho, Jon Stewart, Larry the Cable Guy, Ellen DeGeneres, Dave Chappelle, and get the Kindler critique. On all fronts, you can join us as well. Are you laughing these days, despite everything? Who makes you laugh? And what is the state of American humor? Where's your funny bone lately? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Andy Kindler, the comedian's comedian, about the state of American comedy. He gives a big annual speech to the world's biggest collection of comedians and comedy industry pros about the state of the industry, as he calls it. The doors are always closed to the public this morning. We're blowing them open. Andy Kindler joins us from London. You can join the conversation as well. Where's your funny bone lately? Who breaks you up? Who messes with your mind? Who gets you going, and how do they do it? Who bores you silly? There are a lot of comics Andy Kindler does not like at all. Here's one that he does, Jon Stewart, from an episode of The Daily Show earlier this week.
This April, religious conservatives organized Justice Sunday, a 90-minute broadcast urging America to stop filibustering people of faith. Well, this past weekend saw Justice Sunday 2, Electric Boogaloo, and nearly the entire cast was back for the sequel. But the villain they thought they'd defeated during the first Justice Sunday was back.
The biggest threat facing America today is the out-of-control judges.
The biggest threat to America is our out-of-control judges, specifically Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Osama bin Laden.
Ladies and gentlemen, find your children. Those out-of-control judges are rampaging through the streets of America. Andy, there are plenty that you savage and ravage Jon Stewart. Where's your thumb go?
I love Jon Stewart. And the thing was, I never liked The Daily Show when it was Craig Kilborn, because I think he was just kind of, I don't know what the word, smarmy, or kind of just had the attitude. He had the kind of attitude of someone being funny, but right, without the actual jokes. But Jon Stewart was a brilliant comic before he took over The Daily Show. So it's really his personality that drives it. And also, it really is kind of the only place you can get news, actual news, that or a view into a sarcastic view or an incisive view as to what's really going on in America, because the regular newscasts aren't doing it. Chris Matthews isn't doing it on Hardball, I'll tell you that.
Are you surprised by how Hi, Jon Stewart's been raised up by everybody. I mean, could comedians be playing this role more broadly? Is he the only one who's standing up? There have been many comedians over recent decades who sort of were credited with feeling the national pulse. Now he's got not just the pulse he's credited with, but bringing the news. Why does he look so alone with that, or is he?
Well, now you're just making me envious. No, he's great. Well, I think that's traditionally comics can do this. I mean, obviously, Lenny Bruce did it.
Yeah.
I think Richard Pryor did it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that comedy can always do that. I mean, the main thing always is, and even in a way, a show like this can be difficult, too, because I don't want to come across as the I'm the comedy teacher, or you know, I want to be like teaching a What's Funny workshop type thing.
You're the bad boy.
Yeah. I want to be a bad boy. But comedy can do that. The main thing, though, is like what I try and do is, it's all about I want to be funny first. And that's not to say, because Lenny Bruce said, he said, I'm not a comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
And I've often said, I'm not a comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce too, but that didn't seem to make sense. But his point was, he wanted to be able to make a point sometimes. And I think that although the goal of a comedian is to be funny, you need to be funny on your own terms. And that's really not to pile on Jay Leno again, is what Jay Leno's doing is he's trying to find out what middle America likes. And this is part of the process that exists in television and in the media in general.
And you don't believe he really finds his own jokes funny?
I think he's lost his way because everyone loved Jay Leno. I used to see him in the clubs in the 80s.
Yeah.
He was a very fun. That, to me, the saddest thing is when, and I actually go after people a lot of times who I think could be or had been funny. For example, when Dennis Miller used to be hilarious, mm-hmm. and now he's became the right-wing comic. So, my joke was he's 6 months away from doing the Stormy Minute on the Weather Channel. And just like what happens to these people, it gets more sad for me. And to me, if you're in any field that you're in, whether you're a news person or just any job that you're in, you have to do what you believe in. And it's sad to me that people, especially in the media and especially on television, it's turned the other way where they just try and appeal to the greatest mainstream.
So who's hot, who's not in comedy? Let's get Andy Kindler's view on another here. Larry the Cable Guy. Here he is from his blue-collar comedy tour, which he does with Jeff Foxworthy and Ron White. Larry the Cable Guy.
Hey, y'all good. I had a horrible nightmare last night. I tell you, I dreamt I drunk the world's largest margarita. And then woke up this morning, and there was salt on the toilet lid. Thank God I didn't eat the worm in there. I tell you that much right there. Get it done. That's right.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Are you in stitches, Andy?
Oh, no. Well, oh, no. Now that hits a lot of levels because, first of all, I have never liked bathroom humor. I mean, even as, like, when I was in fourth grade, I was like, gentlemen, I implore you. Is this really necessary? And, it's like the movie Austin Powers 3 came out, and someone said, did you see it? And I said, no. They said, well, there's a lot of bathroom humor. And to me, I don't want to see a movie. I've never once been in the bathroom and thought, oh, this would be a great show. So it's like, on that level, it's terrible. But then the other thing is, it's the lowest common denominator comedy. And also, he has this hook line, which he said once there. He says, get her done. What is that? Shouldn't a hook line, like, remember Here Come the Judge?
Yes.
It was funny the first couple of times.
Yes.
Get her done is not funny the first time. What does it mean? Is she not completely finished? Is that it? We have to get her done? And I actually like Ron White. I actually think Ron White's funny. I actually like comics from the South, but I don't want to see every... It's like, it's marketed. Like, who wants to see every single comic in a row is going to be a rednecky comic? And also, the audience that comes to these shows, it's just getting really, really bad. Because I do a thing in my acts like, if you're uncomfortable around minorities, you might just be a redneck. If you in the last election, if you voted against your interest because you were so focused on how much you hated Hillary Clinton, you were ignoring George W. Bush, you just might be a redneck.
Okay, you're morphing now into Jeff Foxworthy. Before we leave the redneck theme, let's get Jeff on here. We've got a clip from him from that You Might Be a Redneck line of jokes.
If you've been on television more than 5 times describing what the tornado sounded like, you might be a redneck. If you've ever cut your grass and found a car, you might be a redneck. If your dad walks you to school because you're in the same grade, you might be a redneck.
And you just don't go with it, Andy.
You see, you get it? People in the, apparently in the South, are they all that dumb, or they think that it's funny, or they? I know the idea is there are people.
It's a send up.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's a wacky stuff. Well, I will say this. Jeff Foxworthy is 100 times funnier than Larry the Cable Guy, but he's not that funny. So, and it's also, to me, again, it's not so much Jeff, well, I don't know. If you took three or four of those jokes and you said, okay, that's good, then maybe you burn that to a disc.
But they never end.
But they just never keep end.
Andy Kindler in London with us. The house is very full this hour. A lot of people want to talk with you, maybe about you. We'll find out. Tara is calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Tara.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. What do you think?
Get her done!
I have this sort of ongoing conversation with people about the old Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And I felt like the original cast and maybe the next cast and maybe the third after that were pretty darn funny. And these days, I don't find it funny at all.
Does that make you old, Tara?
I don't know. No,
I'm being cruel.
Is it funny
I'm sorry.
Or isn't it funny?
Andy Kindler, what about SNL? Is it the holding up the flag?
Well, first of all, Tina Fey, who does the news update, was just on the cover of Overrated magazine this month. And the thing is, there's so
funny.
Well, you know what? She can be funny, but she gives you that self-satisfied smirk after every joke. And the thing that really bugs me with Saturday Night Live is that when they first came on, they were subversive because they were subversive. They weren't trying to be subversive. Now they make fun of Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson. They're right down the middle of the plate. And here's my other theory. The original cast were on drugs, and none of the current people do drugs, and I say bring back the drugs.
Bring
I don't
it
care
on.
If three current members have to OD to get a decent ending to a sketch.
There's the brutal piece. Tara, how about it? Do you think, has the irony come in and buried the revolution?
I agree with everything you said so far. I feel like there was a sort of organic chemistry to the team because they weren't out there competing for careers. They were just goofing off in Chicago, and then they started hitting the networks. Versus now, it's sort of like this commercial, like you're saying, Jay Leno versus David Letterman.
And everything with a wink. Tara, thanks for your call. Let's hear from another comic. Here's Margaret Cho from her Revolution tour.
Don't ask, don't tell. How dare they? How dare they ask you to die for your country, yet not allow you to be who you are? As if you could win a war without lesbians. Who gonna read the map?
This Margaret Cho from a Revolution tour.
What does that mean? Who gonna read the map?
I'm not sure what that means, but she's not using irony there, I don't think. So is this your revolutionary hot one?
Well, you know, here's the thing. This person, Margaret, this woman used to be she has this huge following now, right?
Yeah.
And it's all about playing to her following, and it's all about her personality, and all of her material has become about her career, or it's like in that last bit, it's strident, and then it kind of just goes into hacky. And if you strip away all of her material that's about her and herself and her following, she has like five solid minutes. My mom has 5 solid minutes. Where's her huge gay following?
Your mom's? Well, I don't know. Look around. Maybe she should just look
behind
her.
I'm going to get on it.
Hacky. You use this word a lot. It's the thing you hate. Hacky comedy. Hack comedy. What is that?
It's like when you go down, when you take the most obvious topics and you bang people over the head with them because you know it's going to get a laugh. Everyone, I mean, look, you know, Michael Jackson, he had so much plastic surgery, he looks white. Janet Jackson and her revealing her breast. It's like all the most obvious, you know, take a stereotype about gay people and beat that into the ground. It's in lieu of actually trying. See, what happens to comedians, and this happens to all comedians, and it's very hard, is you get something that works, and then you want it to continue to work because you want to kill.
Yeah,
every comic wants to kill.
Sure.
But the problem with that is you can lose your way, and unfortunately, you have to be willing to not kill all the time and have ups and downs in a career and accept that you're going to have to keep it new and fresh. Like, I used to love Kathy Griffin. Now Kathy Griffin has become like this whole thing. She's the D-list celebrity. So yeah. She's like got a hook now. She's everything's on the D-list. Now, my line about her is she calls herself a D-list celebrity. I say, don't sell yourself long. So, I mean, it gets to be – and she was – I used to be a big fan. She was hilarious. But it's they get into a thing where –
Trapped.
I don't know if it's the fame. I don't know if it's the money that I don't have yet.
But the great ones stay loose. They stay open to what's really going on. Let's get another call. Steve's calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good. What do you think? Who do you like?
I don't think George Carlin's funny.
George Carlin is thumbs down from you. What else?
I think Bob Newhart and Jonathan Winters are incredibly funny. I just, when I was in college, all the hot comics like Andrew Dice Clay and George Carlin didn't make me laugh. And then I'd hear Bob Newhart, I'd hear his stand-up, and I thought it was
so, so you like the sweet ones, the kind of mild ones who get under your skin.
I don't think Bob Newhart's sweet. I think Jonathan Winters had a lot of social commentary, too. I think they were pretty, I saw him on Johnny Carson, and I thought they were... They kind of hit home with some of their comments, but they didn't have to scream and yell and jam it down your throat. They're real subtle the way they said it.
We got it. Let us pick it up, Steve. Andy, what about it on this spectrum from Carlin and Lenny Bruce to Newhart and Jonathan Winters? Caller Steve says, "Hey, I like the Winters end."
Well, you know, to me, you can be hilarious and not have to be controversial. To me, Newhart, I always loved Bob Newhart. And that's one of the things that's so sad about sitcoms is the reason why I'm so upset with sitcoms is because I grew up like loving the Bob Newhart show and Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore. So I agree. I think Bob Newhart is and was and will always be hilarious. He's just a funny, funny person. And Jonathan Winters, to me, is the real deal where I think Robin Williams has been doing a Jonathan Winters impersonation. And the George Carlin thing, here's where I agree with the caller in a way, because I feel like you can't negate how funny George Carlin, how important a comedian he has been, because he has been hilarious. But it seems now that he's very, very angry,
sure, and
he's very, very strident. And sometimes I get the feeling that he doesn't work the material out at all. You know what I mean? It's like he comes up with the hour and he just kind of records it in a way. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's how it sounds sometimes.
Unroll the anger and just let it go, let it go, let it go.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put him in. I mean, to me, Andrew Dice Clay was just kind of a one-note thing. Yeah.
Let's hear another voice, a new voice for many Americans. This is Carlos Mencia from his new Comedy Central show, Mind of Mencia.
This is going out to the jurors in the Michael Jackson trial. I don't know if you know this, but what the is taking you so long? You and I both know what's going on here. The evidence was there. All you need to do is look at that freak's face and know there's something wrong with him. Did he play with the kids or not? I don't know, but you know what? He should go to jail for being a freak in the first place. When you used to be black and then you were white and now you're in some kind of stratosphere of human being that doesn't exist, I swear to God, if aliens came down and took over the planet, they would separate the races, look at Michael Jackson and go... You got here first. Put him in jail already.
Okay, I'm looking for the punchline there. I mean, here's a new line of ethnic humor, kind of the Latino steps out, and Andy Kindler says...
I think I was prophetic. Didn't I just talk about hacky Michael Jackson wife? Well, first of all, he couches his whole act like he's on the edge. It's so dangerous. So he's going to be dangerous, but then he's going to do a joke about how his joke is that Michael Jackson should be in jail because he's a freak. That's his joke. And his show is called The Mind of Mencia with Carlos Mencia, which I think right there shows there's an egomaniacal. Yes, if your name is Mencia, it's probably with you. And I also think that they chose the wrong body part for him. It shouldn't be the mind of Mencia. And if you ever see him live, he says like a lot of insulting things, and then he covers it up with, oh, I'm the bad guy? He has that kind of style.
Right, like,
oh, don't blame me. Don't shoot the messenger. I don't know. I hope that was the worst clip you could find from him.
That was a random clip.
Okay,
and what you hear is what you get.
I hope you weren't having investigators find the worst of
it. We're going to hear a lot more, but you're in London right now. How's the show going there? What's your reception? Are they laughing at you in the
UK? Well, it's been really – I've been having a great time. Well, first of all, one of the reasons why I wanted to leave the country was to get out before Deuce Bigelow European Gigolo opened.
Rob Schneider, yeah.
I was able to escape. And then I got here, and it's great, but I expected it to be like an intellectual wonderland because I always have this image
must be
of
great,
of English. And I get here, it's Big Brother is on the air, which is this horrible reality show, and it's all over the air. They have even have footage of these people. They're in a house and they're sleeping. And then they're recording one of the women who's on the show. Her name is Makuzi. And she says she wants to win so it can prove that a woman of color can achieve something. Oh, really? I think it was Rosa Parks who first entered Who Wants to Sit on the Front of the Bus.
Right. That tournament's been taken. Exactly. Andy Kindler, stand by in London. We're talking about the state of American comedy with Andy Kindler. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Bada boom.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at bicon.com, BICON.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital, for more than 60 years helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Andy Kindler, the comedian's comedian, about the state of American comedy. What do you think? Why does Jay Leno own our premier comedy stage? Are you on board with the Kindler critique? And who's got the mojo these days? Who doesn't? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Andy Kindler joins us from London. Let's hear a little bit of Dave Chappelle from his Comedy Central program, The Chappelle Show. Here he is doing his skit in which he plays the black President Bush.
You win, you have a problem with that? You know what you should do? You should sanction me. Sanction me with your army. Oh, wait a minute. You don't have an army. I guess that means you need to shut the f*** up. That's what I'd do if I had no army. I would shut up. Shut the f*** up. That's right. Okay, now you think I'm going to take orders from an African? You might speak 16 languages, but you're going to need them when you in Times Square selling fake hats. I know Gucci when I see it, nigga. I'm rich. I got a coalition of the willing. I got 40 nations ready to roll, son.
Like who?
Who said that? Huh?
Dave Chappelle, Andy Kindler. Okay, we finally got you chuckling over there.
I love Dave Chappelle. You know, Dave Chappelle, I saw him when he was like 18 years old. This guy was hilarious when he was 18 or 17 years old. I mean, I thought I was pretty funny when I was 18 years old, but if I had gone on stage, I would have probably collapsed, you know? So he's just a naturally hilarious comedian. So you will get no argument against him from me.
Because it's alive, because he's tuned in. And then we read he had something. What was it? He dropped out, went to South Africa, had a nervous breakdown. Don't know what that was. The comedian's disease?
What did you say?
The comedian's disease?
You know what it is? I mean, obviously, I'm not inside his head, and so I don't know. But I think when I read stuff that he was, there were a couple of interviews he did, I think he really was truly examining the show that he was doing. And I have to be honest with you, I haven't watched that show as much as I'm familiar with his stand-up, because I knew his stand-up before the show. Yeah. And I think he was actually honestly examining, is this the show that he wants to do? And so I kind of like, I feel bad about it, and I respect him because I think he's definitely a really funny person and a good person. I just think he's struggling with something about the show, and obviously I'm not privy to what's really going on.
Andy Kindler gives a big annual speech on the state of the industry. The mucky mucks show up, the comedians show up, and they laugh. He's right now in London doing a two-week stand of his show, Misery Loves Company. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Oh, we've got a Rob Kindler calling from Chatham, Massachusetts. Rob, and you would be?
Hey, this is Rob Kindler. I'm Andy's brother.
Oh, okay. So it's a family reunion.
Well, I'm a huge, huge fan of On Point. I just think it's of course, I never heard about it before this morning when I got on his email.
Okay.
But I do have a question for Andy that, you know, you've had this unbelievable success, Letterman, Everybody Loves Raymond, the big one-man show in London.
Oh, no, yeah.
All these big production deals going on, and my question to you is, when the hell are you going to pay me back the money you owe me? Some of that WNPR money.
Kindler, you're in trouble. Your brother's on the air, and he wants his dough.
I can't believe it. Yeah, my brother is an investment banker, and I told him a couple years ago, I said, you know, why don't you invest in one of my movies? And he goes, well, do you have a movie idea? I said, oh, okay, trick question.
Investment banker brother with and a comic? I mean, how deep is is this this bankroll that he's put your way in.
Well, that's why. Can't he give me a couple of a million just to get the juices flowing? He's gotten me out of some deep holes, believe me.
Well,
I recommend.
I guess every comedian ought to have an investment banker brother. Are you still there for him, Rob, or are you waiting for the
Absolutely.
Payback?
Absolutely. I'm also wondering why he never tells any of my jokes.
My brother has the same material for 20 years. But the thing is this. I think anybody who wants to do something controversial in comedy that's going to burn bridges, you really need to have an investment banker brother behind you.
And everybody's brother has the same material for 20 years. Rob Kindler in Chatham, thanks a lot for calling.
Let's get another call. He's on the Cape.
Yeah, he's sure.
He's on the Cape.
Sure, he's living large.
Yeah,
he's living
fantastic.
Large.
Fantastic.
Let's get a call from Baton Rouge here. Jeremy's on the line. Hi, Jeremy. What do you think?
Hey, I am loving this conversation. I'm sitting outside. I'm supposed to be making sales calls, but I'm burning up expensive gas.
Oh, good.
And the air conditioning, listening to you guys. Andy, what you've been saying, I've been trying to tell people this for the last 3 years. It's unbelievable. I do comedy. I've been doing comedy for about 2.5 years. And I find that I don't want to sound hubris or anything, but you have to kind of dumb it down for the crowd.
And uh-oh, you're sounding hubris there.
Yeah, very hubris. Uh-oh. Yes. But I've seen other comics do the same thing. Some intelligent observations go completely over a lot of the crowd's heads. I mean, unless you're performing for a group of PhDs or something, they're not going to get it. And I'm just wondering if what came first, the chicken or the egg.
But wait a minute, Jeremy. I mean, this is not a nation of fools, I hope. I don't believe it is. So why the down spiral?
Well, I don't know. Do you think maybe the people who are going to the clubs aren't intelligent? I mean, I've seen it happen on more than one occasion, and you have the dumbed down comic. I mean, I think Ron White was way funnier than any of the ones on the Blue Comedy Tour, but nobody talks about him. They always talk about Foxworthy and get her done.
So what's the common denominator here? Let us try to pick it up, and don't use all that gas. We don't want to be, you know, drinking that Saudi oil forever. Andy, what about this? Is it the race to the bottom?
Well, actually, I think Ron White has some stuff going on. He's got some deals going on. He really is truly funny. You know, I grew up listening to Andy, you know, Andy Griffith, and I loved the Andy Griffith Show. So, I mean, I love Southern humor. But what the caller's talking about has to do with the nature of comedy clubs. I mean, I used to do this bit in my act where, you know, I talk to my agent, and I go, I don't know, going on the road, comedy in a comedy club sounds a little dicey. Because what the deal is that comedy clubs never marketed for the individual comedian. So you never know. Be like a movie theater saying, hey, come down to the movies. You don't know what you're going to see. Just get down there. So a lot of people have a sense of humor, would never go to a comedy club. And comedy clubs over the last 15 or 20 years, have since the late 70s and early 80s, when you had the Comedy Store and the Improv and all these great clubs, the mainstream comedy clubs have gotten really dumbed down. And all the best comedy is pretty much in these what they call alternative clubs.
So you're talking about the mainstream becoming, the clubs themselves becoming hacky, to use your loathed word.
And you have to kind of find the right market for yourself. But the only thing is, it is good to do horrible clubs, though, because it does. You need to have a thick skin.
And what's the difference between the mainstream clubs and the alternative clubs? How are you supposed to know? Different color out front? Different doorman? What?
It's hard to tell, because some of the mainstream clubs, like I play Caroline's, and it seems like when I go to Caroline's, and there was like an article in the New York Times about me. And
hey,
then
I'm out of that. Is that in New York, Caroline's?
Yeah, that's on Broadway.
Okay.
And there was an article in the Times about me, and then my brother brought down some people from his investment company. So it's like, with a lot of different marketing, I was able to get a full room of people who liked what I was doing. So sometimes the mainstream clubs can be good, and depending on the city. Like, I love to go to this place in Minneapolis called Acme, which is great, you know. But Minneapolis, Austin, I like. You know, there's in the major, major markets, there are sometimes the mainstream clubs are better. But the truth is, in any city, like in the South, anywhere, there's really cool people who would enjoy. Not that the people are uncool; they like bad comedy.
So,
but there are. They're just the regular comedy clubs are not servicing what these people would like.
So figure it out. Know where it is. Kristen's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Kristen. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? I just want to say thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I agree that Jay Leno is a waste of airtime, and my real question is, how do you feel about Mitch Hedberg? He was a comedian that I followed for the last 8 or 10 years, and I've thought he was hilarious, and I probably took it a little harder than I should whenever what happened earlier this year happened. So I guess
what happened to Mitch Hedberg? What happened to him, Kristen?
He He died in some sort of, I'm not really sure exactly what the circumstances were.
Andy, do you know him?
Yes, Mitch Hedberg was a hero. I mean, he was, all comics loved him. He was brilliant, absolutely a brilliant comedian.
Why? And, what was his thing? What was his angle?
You know, people kind of, you know, they compared him in a way to Stephen Wright. Well, Stephen Wright is brilliant too, but he had his own thing, but it was in kind of that non sequitur, stream of consciousness. Not that he was making it up as he was going along, but it's really kind of hard to define, but he was truly, truly hilarious. He was on Letterman a lot of times, too, and it's just a sad thing. He passed away.
So they're out there. Yeah. Keep looking. Yeah. Keep listening. Kristen, thanks for calling. Okay, let's hear another. Ellen DeGeneres. Hear from an opening monologue on her show.
Water seems to be very, very relaxing. A babbling brook is relaxing, although not a babbling person named Brook. That is not relaxing, although Brooke Shields is relaxing. Certain colors, they say. I found out that, did you know this? I didn't know this. Green is very, very relaxing, the color green, which I assume is why you'll see cows lingering in the pasture that you don't ever see just racing through trying to get out of there. Stay. It's also green is very, very relaxing on your eyes, they say. So the next time your eyes are tired, count your money and you'll feel renewed.
Opening monologue from the Ellen DeGeneres Show. Andy Kindler, what do you say?
I do think Ellen's funny, and that kind of thing she does where she takes one word and she goes in different directions with it. I think she's very funny. The only thing is I find it hard to watch that show because she's always got guests like Josh Groban on, and it's like,
so?
The thing is, I do feel that because she had a lot of controversy towards the end of her sitcom, that she's made a conscious decision not to be controversial.
Do you mean not to be too gay on air?
Not necessarily just that, but I think it's understandable that how she reacted to everything that was going on with when she did say that she was gay. So I understand it, but I think there's a little bit too much of a middle of the road feeling to her show. So I'm not compelled to watch it, but I do think she's funny though. I wouldn't put it in the Leno category.
Let's get one more real quick. The big guy, Robin Williams.
I do believe there is a cure for whatever's out there, whatever bioterrorism weapon they may use against us. And it lies within Keith Richards. I think that. I believe Keith is the only man who can go anthrax. All right. Doesn't go with my E. coli. Keith Richards is the only man to make the Osbournes look Amish.
Andy Kindler, oh, we've got goodness. 1 minute left with you. There's Robin, and the laughs are big. You hear them. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that Keith Richards jokes. How does he come up with this current material?
What? The Stones are opening a national tour tomorrow night.
We've been doing these Keith Richards does drugs and these how can he still be living for 20 years. He more than anybody is the biggest offender of just doing the same bits over and over. And then his just something about his whole tone, his whole voice is just, he's so obviously uncomfortable with himself. That's my theory about it, that he's come up with this and he needs to get laughs every few seconds.
Maybe
so
you're
he's just
bored. Maybe there should be some kind of, you know, term limits on comedians, like off the stage.
I would be in favor of a mandatory retirement for comedians.
Andy Kindler, we hope you never retire. We hope you keep the big critique coming, and we're so grateful to you for being with us this hour.
I appreciate it. I had so much fun. Thanks so much.
It was wonderful to have you. Andy Kindler, stand-up comedian, creator of the State of the Industry address that he gives every year at the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal. He's right now in the middle of Misery Loves Company, his one-man show in London. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, the latest on rockets that narrowly missed U.S. naval ships docked at the Jordanian port of Aqaba. Today, this is On Point. We end the hour with the latest news on this morning's rocket attacks in Jordan. One narrowly missed. Two U.S. ships docked at the port of Aqaba. A second rocket fell close to a nearby airport in Israel. The third was fired at a Jordanian hospital. The attack on American vessels was the first in the region since the U.S. coal tragedy 5 years ago. A group linked to al-Qaeda claimed responsibility in an internet statement. Ed Wong is correspondent for the New York Times. He joins me from Amman, Jordan. Ed, what's the latest?
Hi. I was just speaking with the military. They were just giving me some information on what had happened. We believe these were Katyusha rockets that were fired from land at around 8:44 a.m. right on the port of Aqaba. And basically one sailed right over the bow, the bow of one ship and landed on a warehouse. It blew an 8-foot hole in the ceiling of the warehouse. And apparently the shrapnel apparently killed one Jordanian soldier who was right in the area. None of the ships were damaged. There were only two ships in the port at the time. They were amphibious assault ships that were carrying a Marine expeditionary force into Jordan so that the Marines could conduct fairly routine security operations, security practice operations with Jordanian soldiers.
Ed, we saw the damage to the USS Cole those 5 years back, that suicide boat attack that blew an enormous hole in the side of that boat. If one of these rockets had hit the U.S. ship, how much destructive capacity do they have? Could they have sunk a ship?
I'm not sure if they could have sunk the ship. They could have done some damage, but the structural integrity of the ship would have taken a hit. It's unclear whether they actually would have sunk the ship or not.
And what's known about who might have carried this out and what message is intended with the rocket attack?
Well, there is a group that has links to al-Qaeda that has claimed responsibility, as you said, in an internet statement. Now, the use of rockets, of these Katyusha rockets in attacks, is something that al-Qaeda-linked groups have done before. For example, in Mombasa, in East Kenya, a few years back, we saw them use a rocket to fire at an aircraft that was taking Israeli holidaygoers back home. It was an Israeli aircraft, a commercial plane. So that was one of the latest uses of these rockets in attacks, and groups linked to al-Qaeda claim responsibility in those attacks also.
We've heard two Iraqis and a Syrian arrested this morning in Jordan. Can you confirm that, Ed?
I don't have any word of that at this point.
And what about the speculation there? Does this appear to have been timed to Israel's Gaza pullout?
I'm not sure if it's timed so much to Israel's pullout as it is just an attack of opportunity on American vessels. A lot of the more conservative Islamic groups in this region have always harbored resentment at both Israel and the U.S., and they don't necessarily pick these political touchstones to at which time their attacks, although that is the case in Iraq, but outside of that, they basically plan these operations well in advance, and it's not necessarily a case that they do time them.
Does it look like an extension of the Iraq conflict or al-Qaeda operating in the same way it did in Yemen years ago?
Well, I mean, if we look at al-Qaeda today, you can't really define al-Qaeda in a very strict sense. There are a lot of groups that have sprung up that say that they're inspired by al-Qaeda. They use the same techniques. They might get lessons from some of the core al-Qaeda members in internet postings or in booklets that are distributed. And they themselves say they're part of al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a very loose network. It's not just one core group or one central group. And so many of these groups say they are al-Qaeda.
With a near miss in Jordan this morning, Ed Wong with the New York Times, thank you for being with us. We'll be following that story. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.